This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
And one, as we say hi, good morning, good afternoon. It's the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Patrick Maher, of course, the big guy there, Michael Lombardi. How have we not gotten to three with Indy tonight, hosting your boy Kenny Pickett in Indy? We'll get to, of course, Monday Night Football in a bit. But how about we start here, my man? A double dip for the Lombardis. Go Matt, wow. Go Mick. Let's get it, right?
Oh my
Good
God.
Day at the Lombardis house.
I wish you'd have been at the house. You know, we got Bill, Anissa, Millie, and I were watching the game. I mean, I thought they was going to lose it about
Tremendous.
Four times. And what was impressive about the Josh Jacobs 86-yard run was how much faster he was than everybody on the field after he'd been toting the mail most of the game. I mean, two things I learned about Josh Jacobs is he's faster than I thought he was, A, and B, his hands are exceptional. They never use him in the passing game, but, man, he made two plays in the passing game that were just fabulous. And credit to the – look, the Raiders have been playing hard for McDaniels. They've been playing hard. They're not very good. They struggle. They're missing some players, but they fight. Other than the New Orleans game, they have fought. But yesterday was the ultimate fight. To go up there and to win on the road at overtime, their second road game, your second overtime win, it's pretty impressive.
33 rushes for Jacobs, 229 yards. He doesn't look like he's moving that fast, kind of a la Eddie George. Even Emmitt Smith didn't look like
Got
he was moving
Emmitt
that
to
fast.
Him, yeah.
But it's natural. It's natural. He's a born runner, like you say. He's out the crib. And he's a runner, and he's done a hell of a job, a concerted effort for the Raiders, and a 40-34 overtime win, of course.
You know, the one thing I want to point out here, and I think it's important. Last year, they played this playoff team that everybody talks about. You know, they played – you remember they played Kansas City at home? First play of the game, I think Jacobs fumbles. Mike Hughes picks it up, runs it in for a touchdown. That game ended up, 41-14? They just – quit. The game was over, but, you know, the game was done. This game, they throw an interception in the first play of the game, and they're down 7-0 quickly, and they come back and go 11 plays and tie the score. Different yep. team. Different mindset, different toughness to this team, to me, when I watch them.
Love to see it. Also love to see Carolina and Matt Lombardi pick up a win. I think Wilkes is going to get that job. I think he's going to keep the job because the team's been so competitive under him.
I think, look, I said this on the podcast, Patrick, but think about this. And Matt Rhule's getting announced today at Nebraska as the head coach. Congratulations, Matt. But the reality here is if York misses that 58-yard field goal, Carolina's 5-6, and maybe Rhule's still the coach. But credit Wilkes. I mean, Wilkes came in, he got the job, and he said, look, I'm going to do it my way. I'm determined to do what I need to do. And he, you know, got rid of Phil Snow. He got rid of some of Matt Rhule's main guys that are that were with him for a long time. And he's kind of run the program and got rid of Robbie Anderson, who he didn't want on the team. And he's kind of held the players accountable, and they played hard. To me, that game yesterday was an example of one team's listening to their coach, the other team's not. And that's where I was on the pod today. Look, Nathaniel Hackett, I don't really know him. I know his dad really well. I love his dad. I learned a lot of football from his father. But there is a time in a business that's worth billions that the time is now. Like, if they continue to go on with this, they're just allowing it to happen.
Let's start there. Before we do, I just want an answer because we'll tease it and come back and cap it. Are you surprised Indy hasn't gone to three hosting Pittsburgh tonight?
Yeah, I am. I am.
Okay.
I really am. I mean, I. To me, it's the perfect. I mean, Indy's defense can carry them. I said this on Russo on Friday. You know, Russo was talking about how, you know, Jeff Saturday. I said, Christopher, you and I are doing the same. I mean, the only difference between Saturday and you and me is we have a cocktail on our hand. He doesn't. Like, he's not doing anything. This defense is carrying them.
We'll get to that game coming up in just a bit. We close out week 12 in Indy. Just a little surprise. The number actually kind of scares me a little bit as an Indy backer tonight, but we shall see. Okay, so we've got Russ talking. You saw what happened. Hackett's going to go. Whether or not they get rid of him during the season, it's almost like you put him out the pasture because he's well in over his head. This team has been a disaster. It's one of the worst offenses we've seen. I mean, it's really just about as bad as it gets offensively. Why don't we start there with Russ and Nathaniel Hackett and what to do moving forward for the Raiders here?
Well, I think to me, you know, Nathaniel, the reason I think you have to do something now is because Denver's going to become a better's best friend. Because the effort, the intensity wasn't there yesterday. That team didn't play hard. They're not listening to their coach. They're not well coached. They're not well coached on offense. Now, their quarterback's part of the problem too, don't get me wrong. And so when you fire the coach, are you absolving the quarterback? No, you're not. But that being said, you got to do something to give some life. You've got six games left. You know, you're going to Baltimore this week. You're a Baltimore team that just lost on the last play of the game. You know, your defense is starting to decay. You gave up 109 yards rushing to the Raiders last week. Another 185 to Carolina, which you knew Carolina was going to run. The defense has been playing doubleheaders. If you're the general manager, I know you hired them, but at some point you got to say to yourself, look, we got six games left. I want to try to see what we have here. I know we don't have a quarterback, but I got to see what else we have. I mean, they've lost three overtime games this year, Patrick. Think about that. They lost three overtime games, and you say, well, they're close in a lot of these games. Yeah, but are they really? I mean, they could have lost the Jacksonville game too.
We talk every week, and again, it's a 23-10 winner for Carolina. That number closed Pick'em. A couple of shops closed Denver, a one-point favorite, Michael Lombardi. But rock bottom offensively, Russell Wilson threw for a season-low 142 yards. And then once they got inside Carolina's 25, he fumbles the ball. Just a lack of awareness, a lack of focus, and he was approached by a defender on his own team and screamed at. I think everybody saw it on television. Here's Russell Wilson talking about what was said there.
Mike and I are on the same page. You know, he came off after they kicked the field goal, and he was pissed off. He just said, "We got to F and go," you know, and. I agree, you know. So me and him on the same page. We, you know, there's no animosity there at all. We're on the same page. We got to win. You know, we got to come out here and have some grit to us, some mentality to us. We got to be able to win these football games. And you know, so those guys are out there battling every play. You know, on offense, we got to be able to capitalize.
Okay, not fair of me to call him a liar, but certainly disingenuous. There's a disingenuous nature to Russell Wilson, and as a better, and that's what we do, I think there is something here as far as there's no synergy with the team. When a player reacts like that to the captain of the team, essentially, a guy you're paying everything for the next 8 years, there's no synergy here.
You can't, the players, you can't fool the players, right? You can't fool them. They know the problems, right? They know the coach is a problem. And when that interaction happened, the coach just watched it. Instead of saying, hey, fellas, let's go, you know, like getting involved, Nathaniel's personality is soft. His team's soft. And if you want to keep going six more games of softness, then go ahead. But if you're the owner of the team, you got to go to your general manager and say, what can we do? You know, and Ejo, the defensive coordinator, maybe you put him in charge. They play hard for him, you know. And maybe you go back and try to fix some of the things. I mean, but when you can't score, I mean, in the last three games, Patrick, they scored 36 points.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, yesterday, what they had, when you take the sacks involved, they had 125 yards of passing offense, which they had 160 against the 49ers in week three. I mean, they can't get first downs. They can't convert. I mean, think about this. Carolina was 2-for-12 on third down and won the game handily. The score's 23-10, but it was 23-6. It took them 18 tries from the inside the red zone to get that 7 points.
You just never know. And I mean this. You never know. And Carolina's now 4-8, a game and a half out of first place in the NFC South. They got a long way to go here. All kidding aside, listen, Darnold didn't put up eye-popping stats, but he didn't make the mistakes. Right? No. In a couple of big throws when he needed to make the big throws. And Dante Foreman has been awesome.
They've actually been better since they've gotten away from this McCaffrey kind of thing. Like they're a power run team. They put Chuba Hubbard in there, and this offensive line has really improved. They've really improved. And they've gotten better. They've run the ball. They should be a little bit more dynamic offensively because of DJ Moore. They've got some skilled players. But they're not trying to lose the game. I mean, they're not trying to lose the game. They're trying to say, hey, look, we're going to be in this thing. I mean, last week they're in the Baltimore game. In the Baltimore game into the fourth quarter. Now, they only scored 3 points, you know, but they were in it. They turned it over late. And, of course, Mayfield's part of the problem. I mean, when this team protects the football, when this team protects the football, they got a chance to win. You know, they have a chance to win the game, and their defense is not great. It's good enough, and they play hard enough. I mean, go back to that game they played against the Rams, the first game Wilkes took over. That's a 24-10 game, but it was a lot closer than that game. Then they beat Tampa at home. They lose a heartbreaker to Atlanta because they miss an extra point. You know, they get blown out by Cincinnati, and then they come back, beat Atlanta, play a tough game against Baltimore. I mean, look, they got a bye week. They got to go to Seattle after this, but then they got Pittsburgh, Detroit at home, and then they finish up with Tampa. I mean, can they win two more games? Sure they can. I think Wilkes has done a great job.
I think he's done a great job, too. You know, it's funny. You and I were sitting here yesterday on the Lombardi Line. We're here every weekend, and we joked that non-bettors and just football fans looked at the board and said, no good matchups today. History was made. Four teams, yeah. The Bucks, the Jags, the Chargers, and the Raiders, excuse me, the Browns, won despite trailing by 7 in the final 2 minutes. You saw the Jags and Chargers go for 2 to win it, take a risk. You saw, obviously, after the game, Kyler Murray throwing your boy Cliff Kingsbury under the bus, which we'll get to. And maybe a breakout for Trevor Lawrence. You know, that's interesting. Yeah, that's kind of one of those performances you need to propel yourself, and that was Lawrence on that final drive.
It was unbelievable. And it's Kyler Murray. He's the Ralph Cramden of bus drivers. This guy, he'll throw everybody under the bus. I mean, you imagine the two guys that got $250 million are the two guys who can't wait to throw somebody under the bus, Russell Wilson and Kyler. I mean, it's unbelievable. We should give the Ralph Cramden Award for the best bus drivers. It's unbelievable.
He tanked. He tanked and petulantly wanted to get that extension. The capitulation by the organization.
It's their
capitulation
fault.
By the Arizona Cardinals, and now he's back to throwing the head coach under the bus. You can't make the dude happy. Mike White made Jets fans happy. He's next.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Lombardi Line, brought to you by BetMGM. Of course, the king of sportsbooks. Visit BetMGM.com or download the BetMGM app, which has been reconfigured in-game. Slick. If you're in town there in Nevada, stop by any MGM property, bring your state-issued ID, ready to go. 21 years or older, 1-800-GAMBLER if you have an issue. Favorite, 7-3 straight up, 6-4 ATS, two pick'ems in the mix. Unders were 7-5, so the dogs on the season, 55.6. The unders, 56.5. If you're looking at the NFL, head east. How about the AFC East? We'll get to the Jets, but Miami and Buffalo atop at 8-3. Even New England, 6-5. And then you look at the NFC East, those four teams in the postseason right now. Philly beat up on the Packers last night. We'll get to that game coming up in just a bit. 10-1. And you've got Dallas 8-3. The Giants and Washington both have 7 wins. But we head to Jersey, where the weather was gross, but the quarterback play from your boy Mike White. I mean, that first half was really incredible. The way he played, I think it was the most passing yards in the first half by a Jets quarterback since 06. Let's go there and talk about the spark he provided for the Jets in the win.
I mean, look, they averaged 7 yards per play. I mean, just for the game. I mean, they averaged 7 yards per play, and the game was over at the half. They were 58% on third down in the game. And so what happened is, and I think for Jet fans you have to feel good about is the fact that you were able to run the ball. You got a big play running by Johnson, touchdown. And then this guy only had 6 incomplete passes the whole day. So he was efficient when he threw the football. So, you know, at the end of the day, you walk off the field, you got 54 rushes in completion with only 6 incompletions, and you averaged almost 5 yards a carry running the football. And once the Bears got through their offense where they kind of showed what they were going to do with Simeon, who got hurt in pregame warm-up and wasn't going to play, but then he was going to play, you know, this is the problem when you have a quarterback that runs a 6-back offense like Justin Fields, and then the backup is a traditional quarterback. Like you can't change offenses, and that offensive line got exposed, and then problems show up. And the longer the game went, the Jets were able to use their dominance defensively to take it over. So credit to them. I think White just comes in there and executed the offense. And look, the Bears are they're not a great team. And when they lose their one player who can make an explosive play, it became painful.
It's a 31-10 winner, but you just talk about a player a la what Heineke's done with Washington. Look, White completed passes to 10 different receivers, And you just have to call out the elephant. I mean, these players did not like Wilson. Wilson threw the defense under the bus. And there's a spark there. There's a spark.
Yeah. I mean, I don't – you know, it was funny in the Carolina game yesterday. You were probably weren't watching because it was over. There was a moment where you almost felt like they were going to bench Russ. It was 24-3. There was a lot of time in the fourth quarter. But, you know, it would have been interesting to see if Ripien went in and what happened. I mean, this is the case where, you know, the first drive of the game, you know, the Jets get the ball. They start the game off. They go, you know, they go nine plays, 75 yards, get five first downs, they get the lead. You know, and then even though they weren't able to stop the Bears, you know, the Bears came out with a nice drive. They had a field goal. Then they get a touchdown. They kind of got back into a rhythm again offensively. They lost ball and downs, but they actually looked like an effective offense. They had balance, and this kid made throws in bad weather, and they
Okay, we lost Michael. An interesting stat, and that is Garrett Wilson. We saw some. I think we got Michael back. But, Michael, Garrett Wilson, the rookie, two touchdowns in Week 12 to raise his total to four. Flacco, two to him, and then also Mike White, two to him. So Zach Wilson did nothing with the rookie, and that's important here as far as that chemistry.
No doubt, no doubt. And look, they felt – you could just feel a rhythm to what they were doing offensively. Now, they got to go up to Minnesota and play. That'll be a hard place to play. I mean, their defense is good, so they can play on the road. Their offensive line still is going to be a problem. When they go on the road, it's still going to be an issue. But they have, I think they have what Washington has, and I think they have this kind of sense of, okay, we believe in this guy. Let's go. He's going to make his mistakes. He's not going to throw a perfect game, but at least he gives us a chance to execute an offense.
Okay, well, let's hear from – remember, last week we sat here on Monday and we played the Wilson cut where he defiantly said no, he didn't hurt the defense, and – obviously, that cut got him benched. Here's Mike White. Let's see if there's a difference in energy here.
I think, personally, the way I approach the quarterback position is being a calming presence in the huddle, especially when things aren't going well, because that's when things can start to spiral and snowball. But it's just distributing the ball and letting them be who they are. They're all in that locker room for a reason. This is the NFL. Everybody in that wears pads on Sundays are very good, and you just got to get them the ball and get their confidence going. And once someone's confidence is up, I believe at least that you'll see their game go.
It's not about piling on Zach Wilson. He's a young man, and he'll maybe get another opportunity. I don't think it's going to be with the Jets, but there's a difference
this year.
There's a difference in personality there.
Yeah,
time.
You can see, you know, it's like, you know, when you go into a locker room, or I don't go into the locker rooms when I was in the league, but when you go into the team, when you go in the meal room or hang around the team, you want your quarterback to kind of be in, you know, be around the players and have kind of a connectivity to them. You could see it with Garoppolo. You could see it with Heineke. You could feel that, right? And if you don't have that, your team's personality doesn't generate through the quarterback. It's very challenging. So, I mean, this really helps the Jets. I mean, I give Salah credit. I mean, he made the decision he had to make. I mean, the one thing Zach Wilson did with last Monday's press conference is he forced his hand.
He forced his hand.
He had no choice.
That's exactly what he did. You know what? I do have a question for you, because this is actually quite interesting. So Heineke in Washington, a 19-13 winner there. You saw the play. Deron Payne tipped the ball. That was going to be a touchdown and a winner for Atlanta.
Wide open.
I digress. 1-4 start. Through the first five, Washington was 1-4. They've won 6 of 7. They're 7-5, and they're the 7 seed now. Heineke hasn't played well, yet there is a galvanization to his presence. It's a very odd situation because they're playing. They're running the ball great. Robinson Jr. starting to run the ball well. Could this team be better with Wentz, the way they're playing defensively and the way they're running the football now?
I don't think so. I think, to me, the team believes in the quarterback. I think that defensively they played really well. Now, you know, for all the conversations that we have, they're 6-1 over the last 7 games, and they've cut way back on their turnovers, right? They've cut way back on their turnovers, and they've done a good job of turning the ball over, and they've played better situational football. They're the fourth best team on third down. Their red zone defense dropped after yesterday, but they were 13th in the league in red zone defense going into this weekend. I don't think so. I think that personality has infused the defense, and it has created. Now, Heineke's got to do a better job protecting the ball. We say this all the time. He's going to throw interceptions over the middle of the field. He can't see. He's going to do it, you know. And they were able to overcome that. And they got a look. They lost the Tennessee game to go 1-4 when Wentz is throwing for a touchdown and they lose that game. This is a game they win when Mariota's throwing for a touchdown and has the guy and they tipped it. Those are the hard throws to make in the red zone. There's always hands up. It's challenging when you throw the ball in the middle of the red zone. You know, somebody gets their hands on it. You got to make a play. Remember this. When you're talking about a red zone throw at the goal line, you want it to be low where it either hits the ground or low, and at the back line, you want it to be high. When you throw it over the middle of the field high, it's going to get it has a chance to get tipped.
Heineke, that pick at the end of the first half was terrible. He's always going to throw that 50-50 YOLO ball that's going to get picked. But you mentioned there is a spark. The defense. Now, the defense, Michael, isn't the 49ers. It's not the Cowboys. But they're starting to get good, man. Over their last seven, they're giving up right around 15 points per. And that front,
right.
Once Chase Young comes back, you love Sweat, but you know those Alabama boys. I mean, Payne and Allen in the middle are just monsters. I mean, it's a good defense.
I mean, look, they haven't given up. I mean, they won that Monday night. It was a Thursday night against the Bears. But really, when you go back, I mean, the Eagles in the second quarter moved the ball. The Eagles in Jacksonville in the first two of the three games had 24 first downs and 21. I mean, they've done a good job of limiting explosive plays. Yesterday, they couldn't stop the run. I kind of think Atlanta might be the best team in the South. I know they're not any good, but Atlanta found a way to run the ball. I said this on the podcast, which I don't think people understand. Is a really good coach knows how to run the ball. They spent time designing the run. You know, Walsh used to say this all the time. Every coach thinks he wants to draw pass patterns. You know, how do I get a guy open? But coaches that know how to run the ball consistently through the game are the best coaches. And I think Arthur Smith does that as well as anybody. He ran for, you know, yesterday he ran for 160. They only threw for 165. I mean, he's sitting there at the end of the game, and trust me, I know they're not very good. But they're right there at the end. They're 5-7. They got Pittsburgh this week at home. Then they
Absolutely.
They're in the mix.
Absolutely. By the way, the irony of Smith completely committing to the run all year, and then the turnover was off a pass when he was chunking.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no reason to go past there. Although they had the open, it's just a great play by
Payne.
It was
wide open.
Tipping the ball. So. But they're in the mix. I mean, listen, if you're Arthur Smith, you get on the plane, you're like, we're in an awesome position. Tampa Bay just lost their 5-6. Yeah. We're 5-7. I mean, this is our division to take.
They're like the Giants. They look around the plane and say, we're not any good, but we're right here. Like the difference between Atlanta and the Giants is so small, right? I mean, there's just one or two plays.
Yep. They call it being fortuitous. And to give Atlanta some credit, nobody expected them to be 5-7, so they completely
overexceeded
expectations. Nobody. Okay, when we come back, Thomas Gable, you saw he won that big bet somebody placed on the Packers catching 6.5.
You called it, too. Give yourself credit. You called that.
We'll discuss that next here at Lombardi Line with TG.
You're listening to The Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Hey, it's Monday, Cyber Monday. Get involved. What you can get right now is $30 free on us. You're going to get a $30 credit at the VSiN store. We've got a great store with hats and mugs and t-shirts. All you have to do is become a VSiN Pro. First off, becoming a VSiN Pro is going to win you money, and we're going to give you money. VSiN.com/subscribe. You get everything we offer here at VSiN when you become a pro. Become part of the team. They just won a bunch of money this weekend as well. VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Michael Lombardi, I'm Patrick Maher. We were just in the lab putting together our Betsgiving picks for tonight. We're in the mix. No big deal. Michael Lombardi there. Again, I'm Patrick Maher. As we welcome you back, we've got Thomas Gable joining us now from the Borgata, our partner who runs the race and sports book at the Borgata. Let's just have a little fun and let the audience know what it's like to be a bookmaker. You had a kid killing it yesterday, and then he goes and he takes the Packers catching 6.5. Now, we always talk about getting the best of the number. At some point last week at the Borgata, you could have got the Packers catching 7. The game lands 7, but why don't you walk through the roller coaster that was that kid on a hot streak yesterday, Thomas?
Yeah, he had quite the day, and even losing that Packers bet last night for, I think it was $187,000, he still walked away a winner for the day. And listen, I mean, it could have been a banner day for him if he hit that. I mean, I think he started off the day hitting a $189,000 bet on the Jags. That was, he got them, I think, plus 4. I believe he bought a half a point in that. So Toyota plus 4. That game closed 3, and obviously the Ravens go down and score that late touchdown with 2 minutes left in that game to go up 7, and then Jags come right back, and Trevor Lawrence leads them downfield, and then they go for 2 and then win the game outright. So he cashed on that one, and then he had a big parlay, I think, in the late slate for $50,000 that he hit also, where he had the Raiders plus 3.5 and the Cardinals plus 2.5, which obviously got there. So he rolled that parlay over. Rolled that parlay over to the Packers last night, plus 6.5. And you know, it's funny because you had said in a text, you're like, you know, this game's probably going to land 7. And the Eagles went right down, scored a touchdown, opened the game, and then they come right back and score again, but they missed the extra point.
That's right.
And so they're up 13-0. And I said at that point to someone here, I said, that could be really bad for us, them missing that extra point.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking yeah, the exact same thing, Thomas.
Because when it's when the spread's 6.5, I mean, again, we opened the Packers plus 7 at the beginning of the week and moved to 6.5 after we took some Packers money, and it stayed 6.5 for the remainder of the week. And we had good two-way action at 6.5 throughout the week. And then, obviously, that guy came in last night and bet the Packers heavy. But luckily for us, the Packers ended up missing an extra point later on in the game, which, again, kind of got it back there to that even number of 7. So it worked out with the Packers missing that extra point there at one. But again, even late in the game, I mean, they elect to go for a field goal instead of going for it, instead of trying to get the touchdown when they were down 10. So, you know, it was a sweat to the end for him, for sure.
You know, it's funny. A couple things happened that, you know, they got the 4th and 1. LaFleur's going to go for it, and then they get the false start, so he settles for the field goal there in the 3rd quarter.
Yeah.
And then he takes the field goal to get himself a 1-score game to get back into it. But did he approach you? Because my man Patrick was on it. He said he should have bought the half a point. Did he approach you to buy a half a point?
I'm actually surprised he didn't, because he did it with the Jag earlier. So he bought the half point with that one, and he didn't last night, which was a little surprising, and ended up losing it by a half a point.
I mean, look, it's very elementary. 3 and 7, that's where you start with the key numbers, right, Michael? So the idea of betting that much and not investing in the half, to me, is pretty wild.
Yeah.
I was thinking about you the whole time. Okay, that's good stuff, Thomas. The favorites were 7-3 yesterday straight up, 6-4 ATS with a couple of pick-ems in the mix. How'd the book do overall at the Borgata?
Overall, it was a pretty decent day, I have to say. You know, the early slate, but let's just talk about this Bears-Jets game for a minute, because I knew there was a lot of angst going around right at kickoff there when that game started amongst bettors, because of the news that we heard right before kickoff, which was Bears quarterback Simeon, who was supposed to start. He gets injured in warmups, and now he is going to be the backup. And you know, you saw kind of a rush. Now, again, we were kind of skewed because we always get Jets money, but you know, there's a rush of people wanting to bet the Jets at that point, close 7.5, because we're thinking it's going to be Peterman starting for the Bears. And then ends up Simeon actually does start for the Bears. And, you know, you heard a lot of griping from people about that, and with good reason. You know, when the Bears themselves put that news out, and, you know, it's you have to be careful now with the teams doing this kind of stuff, because, I mean, let's face it, the league itself is now in bed with sports betting. And, you know, people are betting off of news. We're reacting off of news. And when a team puts out news like that, of course, everybody's going to react to it. So it ended up not mattering in the end. The Jets covered easily. That was actually a good result for us, because the total in that kept dropping. People kept pounding the under because of the conditions there. I mean, it was basically a monsoon, but a lot of points were scored and it went over. So we ended up hitting on the total in that. So that was a pretty good decision for us in that game.
Yeah. You know, there was a weekend where at the fourth quarters for you, I can only imagine you watching the fourth quarters because, you know, Brady gets the ball back with 2:13 to go. You figure that's an easy, he's going to cash that game, get two first downs, and the Bucs cover the 3.5. You win that one. You know, the Dolphins has got a 30-0 lead. You don't even look at that. Next thing you know, the Texans are mounting a comeback, and they almost close that one down. Mm-hmm. And then the nightcapper, when you get the Chiefs, who look like they should easily cover that. I mean, Bryce Perkins throws for 100 yards, and, you know, and they end up covering the number at 16.
Yeah, yep. So, and it was funny because those later games, the late slate wasn't great for us. The Niners closed 8.5. They covered the number. The Chiefs closed 15.5. They covered the number. The Cardinals obviously won. Covered the Chargers were favored 2.5 there. Cardinals got the cover on that. And then the Raiders won outright there as dogs. Seahawks closed that game as 3.5-point favorites. But, again, we probably needed Seattle in that game there, and that didn't come through. So the late slate wasn't great for us, but the early games certainly were, and, of course, the Packers-Eagles game was pretty good for us as well. But, yeah, a lot of stuff comes down to the fourth quarter, as always in this league. It's every Sunday. When the point spread's involved, you can never really turn off a game.
Well, it's never happened before. You had four teams, the Browns, the Jags, the Chargers, and Raiders, win despite trailing by 7 in the final 2 minutes. I mean, it's just chaos. Every week, that's why this freaking league, Michael and Thomas, it delivers every single week. It's so good. You had 43
it really
million.
Does.
I say this, I'm a broken record on Mondays. Who are they betting tonight? We are a little surprised we're not 3 with Indy. Of course, Pittsburgh and Pickett in town. Who are they betting at the Borgata?
Very evenly bet game here. Colts are laying 2.5, but a very, very evenly bet game right now between tickets and money. So not much of a decision right now. Obviously, long way till kick off tonight. But total sitting at 39.5, and that really hasn't moved from where we opened it. We know this Colts defense is, you know, I like to call them sneaky good. And the Steelers defense obviously has also been playing a lot better now. Watt is back for them. So this could end up being a defensive battle tonight. We've seen obviously the Colts offense under Matt Ryan once Saturday took over. It's a much better offense when Ryan's in there than Hellinger was. But I think, again, these are two offenses that could potentially struggle here, so in two defenses that have been playing well.
Okay, that's coming up tonight. Of course, Indy and Pittsburgh closing out Week 12. A little surprised by the number. We shall see. Thomas, and it's busy, man. You got college basketball. You've got the World Cup going on in front of you. You got the USA playing Iran tomorrow. So it's going to be another busy week for you, TG. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next time, okay?
All right,
thanks, TG.
Yeah, it's one time a year.
Ooh, Brazil just scored as well after they had one taken away by VAR. Michael Lombardi was telling me about Brazil's squad during the break. The extensive breakdown
Brazil.
From the big
I really
guy.
Do.
I know you do. And I know you love Tom Brady. Now, when we come back, something happened for the first time in Tom Brady's career yesterday. And I'll tell you exactly what it was. Something that was, you didn't see it coming. Specifically, you had, and I thought you were a winner the whole entire game with the Bucs. That was ridiculous at the end there. We'll come back
Russo
and discuss.
Russo must be.
Oh,
Russo
don't
has
even,
a four-leaf clover somewhere.
Don't
even get
up,
me started on
that. Stuck
him.
Up that, at, you know.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, football fans, you could turn a loss into a win with the King of Sportsbooks. Just place a single first touchdown score prop on any Monday or Thursday night pro football game. Hey, that's tonight. And if your bet loses, you're going to receive up to $25 back in free bets. This offer is available all season long. Wager confidently and take your game to the next level with BetMGM. Just log into your account, download the BetMGM app, and sign up today. Okay, so again, first touchdown scorer prop tonight. You can get $25 back in free bets if your bet doesn't cash over at BetMGM. You got to be 21 years or older. If you have a gambling problem, it's 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available, Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. Lombardi Line on a Monday. We've got our guy Pritch coming just about 45 minutes, so plenty to do here. I mentioned and I teased you that Brady, something happened to Brady that hadn't happened in a long time. In fact, ever. Brady was 218-0 when he was leading by 7 in the final 2 minutes in his career. Last night, that flips. Of course, a 23-17 winner for the Browns. Every opportunity for the Bucs to win that football game.
Look, you know, we talk about the fourth quarter, how it tilts the field, right? You know, and that's what happened. I mean, the Bucs have a chance to game management set up. You know, they were horrible in game management in the game. So they get the ball back with, I think, 213 or two, somewhere in the 230 range in the fourth quarter. I'll get it here, Patrick. And, you know, they come right out there and they run the ball on first down. They lose 3 yards. You know, they lose 3 yards. And so, okay, then the next play, they throw it, stops the clock. They stop the clock. And, you know, and then after that, you know, they get sacked. And they basically take 14 seconds off the clock. They do nothing. They get the ball at 235. They give it back at 210. It took 25 seconds off the clock. Now, the whole fourth quarter, they had every opportunity to put the game away. I mean, as we say on the show, Cleveland jumped off to that 10-0 or 10-7 start, right? We knew that. They scored on the first two drives of the game. They had 2 7-play drives. And then Brady's last – the Bucs' last score is with 7:41 to go in the third. After that, they punted six times and had the end of the half, end of the game. I mean, they deserved to lose that. They should have covered that by 2 touchdowns. It's a bad beat. If you took the Browns, pat yourself on the back and say, boy, that was a great win, great handicap, I don't think it was. I think, to me, the right side was the Bucs, but they didn't execute down the stretch. They didn't execute. They had every chance to execute. They didn't do it.
They were just unable to put away Cleveland. Cleveland had 11 total yards in the third quarter. 11. And Cleveland's defense kept the home team in the game. Well, let's hear from Brissett.
Think about what you just said. Cleveland's defense kept him in the game. How can Cleveland's defense keep anybody in the game?
Led by Garrett, of course. The Browns sacked Tom Brady 3 times after halftime. They didn't touch him in the first. So, again, the Bucs were 4 of 15 on third down. I mean, they just, again, if you watch that game, the flow of the game, they had every opportunity to put him away. Now, it's interesting with Brissett, right? He picks up a win here, and it looks like it's going to be Watson moving forward. Let's hear from Jacoby Brissett after the game.
Well, I mean, it's in no disrespect, but in the words of Tom Brady, that was f***ing awesome. That was f***ing awesome.
So Brissett in a good mood. He said, it's effing awesome. I think what Brady said after Germany.
I mean, look, a 4th and 10, you got a chance to win the game. They run the middle read to Joku. You know it's coming, and the kid makes a hell of a throw, but it makes a better catch. And you lose the game. I mean, you get a stop there on that drive, you win the game. But that Tampa has no one to blame but themselves. I mean, at a point, you know, you've got to be able to adjust the game. You've got to be able to figure out how we're going to handle this. And when you don't get any points with 7 minutes to go in the third quarter in a one-score game, you're probably going to lose. You're giving the team too many at-bats. And this is on Bowles and this is on Leftwich. I mean, their offense is just boring. And the fact that they couldn't move the ball more effectively, they ran for 96 yards. The week before, Buffalo ran for 171. I mean, the week before that, Miami ran for 195. You know, so like you can't run the ball. Like you can't come up. This goes back to what I said earlier on the show, what Walsh talks about. You got to find a way to run the ball. You got to find a way to design runs when you need to. You get the ball back with 2:30 to go in the game, and you could put the game away. You're up by 7. All it's going to take is 2 first downs, and you got the greatest quarterback of all time, and you can't figure out a way to win, whether it's man routes or zone routes. Are you kidding me?
Just, I think boring's the perfect descriptor for the Bucs, but also just it seems like there's a malaise over this team. It's not just the Brady off-the-field stuff. you know, Bulls is, he always hung his hat on stopping the run. They can't do that. It's just, there's a weird vibe around this Bucks team this year. They're 5-6.
There really
they
is.
They may not win that. It's wild. They're prohibitive favorites in that division, but I'd almost like to see somebody obviously pick them off there.
Who's going to beat them?
Your Carolina Panthers.
That's why I think it. How about Atlanta? I mean, Atlanta might be the, I mean, even though they're terrible on, nobody's any good.
Terrible.
Nobody's any good in that division.
So here's where it gets interesting. I mean, the NFL set this up perfectly. So I believe today is when Deshaun Watson is eligible officially to return. He's going to start in Houston next week. You want to take a stab at Cleveland, Watson under center at Houston?
I mean, Houston's so bad. I mean, Houston has got bad to bad or to bad. I mean, they're so bad that I think to me, I mean, they're so bad. I would say 7. I mean,
yeah,
because one thing, Houston can't play any run defense, right? They can't play any run defense. They want to be in a 7-man front, and all that's going to happen is that's going to give Watson a chance where they can run the football.
Yep, it's 7. Deshaun Watson in Cleveland at Houston, so he returns to Houston, and that's where they sit. Now, it's an interesting situation, right? Because Cleveland's 4-7, but you've got the two in the north in Baltimore and Cincinnati sitting 7-4. So they're not going to win that division. It'll be interesting to see how Watson, who hasn't played in forever, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think they got to gradually work him back in, right? I don't think you can just put him out there and say, okay, you know, here he goes. Let's start running drop. They're not going to run. They're going to run their offense. They'll have a good opening drive of the game. And, you know, they got to run boots and nakeds, and you can run the ball on this Houston team. I mean, if I'm in Houston and I'm Nick Cesario and I'm the owner, I mean, where are we haven't gotten, we haven't shown any improvement in 3 years.
And you said, just looking at the roster, I think you were telling me yesterday, it's just Houston isn't a very talented roster. The construct is, I mean, you can talk about Lovie Smith, but the roster is not there.
Not there at all. I mean, they're terrible. They're not very good. They're not good up front. They're not, they're one of the worst coached offensive teams I've seen. I mean, you know, they're a high school offense.
And Houston lost 30-15 at Miami yesterday. Remember, that closed 14. So a cover, and they pulled Tua in this matchup, a cover for Miami, 30-15 over Houston.
I mean, that game was over so fast, you know, and you're probably cursing yourself why you didn't lay the 14. And if they didn't take the second half off, I don't know. You know, it could have been a 50-point cover. I mean, they basically made it, and you know, then you're like I told TG, you're nervous. You're nervous. They're not going to cover.
Yeah, that was. It was a dispirited performance by Houston. Let's go to the Dolphins. 8 wins. Where are you right now on the Miami Dolphins?
Well, we're gonna find out. You know, we're gonna find out. Armstead got hurt yesterday, a pec injury, which I think is significant. No left tackle. You're gonna go out and play San Francisco. We'll find out how good they are defensively.
You know what their
schedule
is? They
have not been consistently good. It gets harder now.
They go at San Francisco. My assumption is, will they stay on the West Coast? Because then they're at the Chargers, and then they go at Buffalo. Miami goes at San Fran, at Chargers, at Buffalo. Their next 3.
Yeah, that Buffalo one will be cold. It will be very difficult. You know, Buffalo's got the Thursday night against New England. You know, they've got to start to play better. Buffalo hasn't played well either.
Will they stay out there? So they're going to go to San Francisco on the 4th, December 4th, and then the next Sunday they play at the Chargers. So my assumption is they stay out in California if you're the Miami Dolphins, because that's a hell of a travel.
Usually you do. Stay right there. I mean, and I'm sure they can. You know, it works out. It kind of helps your team. It bonds. It's the perfect time to do it later in the year.
That is a brutal schedule. I mean, they go at those. This is Miami. They close out the year at San Fran, at Chargers, at Buffalo. They host Green Bay. They're at New England, and then they host the Jets. So they go in division a lot to close out the year as the rest of the league is. So we're going to find, you just said it perfectly. They're 8 wins in. We're going to find out about the Dolphins as you take a look at the schedule right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, they've had their easy schedule. I mean, think about what they've had, right? I mean, that Viking game, they lost, they were hurt. The Jet game, they lost. And when he's come back, since he's been back, they've had the Steelers. That was a close game, right? You know, he's trying to throw the Lions. They that was a close game until the half. The Bears game was a close game until the final drive. You know, they've been able to win those games. I don't know how good they are on defense, and certainly yesterday wasn't any test of where they are defensively.
The Chargers go for two in the desert. It pays off for your boy Staley. Also, if you haven't heard what Kyler said about his head coach,
it's
pretty wild. You're going to hear it next here on the Lombardi Line.
Football fans can turn a loss into a win with the King of Sportsbooks. Just place a single first touchdown scorer prop bet on any Monday or Thursday night pro football game. If your bet loses, you'll receive up to $25 back in free bets. This offer is available all season long. Is available all season long. Is available all season long. Is available.